is Davin's Den. Is Davin's Den.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Davin's Den. If you're listening live, sorry about those tech issues. We have the talented comedian Kevin Lee joining the show. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, long time no see, man. I changed my name since you last saw me. It's the one and only Kevin Lee.
The one and only Kevin Lee? I kind of feel like that's a lie. I feel like there's other Kevin Lees out there.
Well, there is. There's a UFC fighter named Kevin Lee. He's getting pretty popular for a minute, then he got his ass whipped.
Okay. There's also the General Lee, which you're probably not a fan of, and there's also my favorite. No disrespect, Sarah Lee. I believe Sarah Lee is the favorite of all my Lees, but
that's my favorite.
Yeah. So, but
well, Bruce Lee is my favorite.
Well, no, I'm gonna go on my list. It's gonna go Sarah Lee, Kevin Lee, Bruce Lee. That's how my list is going. But I got to be honest, I find Sarah Lee much sweeter and more delicious than Kevin. So that's really where my allegiance goes.
Well, that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Hey, don't knock until you tried it.
So before we get on to all of our topics, our hot button topics for the day, Kev, what have you been doing during the break?
Ah, man, I've been traveling. Well, I haven't been traveling that much as I normally do, but I did recently go to Florida. And
hey, Kevin, where's your mic? Hold on, Kevin, where's your microphone? I'm not seeing your microphone on your Zoom.
You don't see my mic on my Zoom?
No. Do you see it, Pip?
No.
So check your settings on your computer.
I'm on your Zoom. Hold on. Let's see.
I want to make sure that our audience is hearing your pearls of wisdom.
Exactly. Well, I mean, they could always
hear
me?
Can they hear me?
I mean, I can hear you, but that's because we're talking on the phone.
Yeah.
Can your audience hear me?
Not if they're watching on Zoom. Not if they're watching on the Davin's Den page.
Okay, hold on. So, what am I doing wrong here?
The Zoom should pop up.
Let's see.
On
your left.
Should there be a little mic?
Yeah, there should be a mic where it says, like, mute. You see that? Lower left of your screen.
Yeah. All right. Okay. More. That is no background. Raise hand. Okay. Stop video. Join audio.
Yeah, we go. Let's see. Nope, still.
Join audio.
Yeah, but I still don't. You're still not registering.
Well, I dialed in.
Hold on. Kevin Lee is connecting to audio. Let's see. This is fucking ridiculous. There we go. There we go.
Alrighty.
Yeah. All right. So
we're gonna start from the beginning again.
No. What have you been doing? What have you been doing during the comedy hiatus, which most of us are going through?
One second. We're getting a slap back now. So you
Kevin,
have to turn off your computer's audio. Kevin.
Turn off the volume on your computer.
I didn't turn the volume on my phone down. Okay, so now you want to turn the volume on the computer down.
Yes, not the Zoom volume, but the regular volume.
Got you. All righty, so let's see if I can pull this off. All right, let's see. All right, it's down.
All right, there we go.
Is that better?
Yes.
Yep.
We have a show now?
Well, we've had a show, but you know, this Zoom is brand new. We understand, Kevin. So for the third time,
yeah,
what have you been doing during the cold comedy hiatus?
I am working on my retirement plan, actually.
Oh.
I don't know if comedy's going to come back, man. And I don't think it's going to come back, Davin. I don't think it's going to come back at the level. I think a lot of clubs are not going to survive this. And I think it's going to be a different ball game when it does come back. I don't know, man. I've been trying to figure out how can I make it. I've been doing this since I was a teenager professionally, so this is all I do. I mean, I don't have any, you know, college degree or anything to fall back on, man. So I don't know. I might be like screwed here, dude. So, you know,
I do agree with you. I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't that great before the coronavirus. You know, live entertainment.
Well, I've been around for a long time, so I've been through the good part of comedy and I've been through the bad part of comedy. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right. The last 3 or 4 years of comedy has been pretty rough for most comedians at our level, I would say. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for over 35 years. I was around during the comedy boom, man. So I remember the good days, man. And when you made good money, when you weren't even a famous comic, you still got paid good money. And the college circuit used to be big. The cruise ships were big. I mean, I played all those venues. So I made good money doing it, man. You know, just the comedy clubs became something that, you know, just became a horrible thing. the comedy industry ruined our industry.
Yeah, I mean, the clubs are fun to play, but there's not a lot of money in them. And I agree with you. There's not a lot of venues are not going to be able to open up. Some are probably gone forever. I think you're going to see that in New York City. I think you're going to see that on the road where Kevin and I often are. It's going to be sad, you know. But you know, it'll probably come back. But who knows how long and what it's going to shake out as. I'm shocked people are going out now. I mean, I just did shows this Friday night. I did two shows, and I was surprised to see people. And I know people are still going to clubs. I wouldn't go to a club if I wasn't working. I mean, I'm staying home. I'm just going out to eat and going to live entertainment, but I wouldn't go out now. But people are, so thank goodness, I guess. They're just braver than I am.
I was in the Sunshine State. Where people don't believe in masks, and we know why. I won't bring that up, but I mean, you know, I got a lot of fans down there, man. I perform in Florida more than anywhere, I think, in the country. I think I do more shows there than anywhere. I mean, I perform there like 4 or 5 times a year. I go there, and I love it there. I love the clubs there, and I got a fan base there, but they don't wear masks there. It's like, wow. It's crazy.
Which is why I'm not. I'm not going. Like I've called a place or two, and I'm trying to book for the second half of next year. That's when I figure the vaccine will kick in. Like I figure the first 6 months are going to be rough, but I'm trying to do the second half. Like when we go to the Bahamas with Kevin and I both do. When that starts firing up again, I'm trying to get for the second half of next year because I just want all this. I want everybody to get their vaccines, whatever's going to happen, the herd immunity, whatever's going to be. I want it to shake out because, you know, as I talked about in the first segment, there's too much anxiety to go into these dangerous places.
So you want everybody else to be a guinea pig for you is basically what you're saying.
No, not everybody. No, first it has to be the first responders. They're the first guinea pigs, then the old people, and then me. No, actually, what's not going to happen, here's what I'm afraid of. I'm not afraid of the stuff that's going to happen right away. I'm afraid of the shit 10, 15, 20 years down the road. You know, when you get like a horn or something or some weird shit that they can't possibly, you know, plan for. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about like not feeling well now.
You know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid I hate needles. I hate needles. I hate getting shots, man. I can't stand shots. When I was a kid, I never told anybody this, I think, but when I was like in the second grade, and they came in to give shots for, I guess, the measles or something like that, to all the kids in the school, I hid under the table and missed my shot.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So I never got my shot because I hid under the table because I was afraid to get the needle. I saw that's when they had the little, you don't know how old you are, but they said the gun needle. They just shoot you in the arm with it. And I hid under the table. I never got that shot.
Wait, yeah. How could you, like where, what does the doctor do? Just like walk in, go, oh, I don't see anybody here, and close the door, and that's the end of it?
Back in those days, I'm old, Davin. They used to come into the classroom and give you shots back in those days.
Oh.
I remember, yeah, I was in the second grade. I remember them coming into the classroom, and you line the kids up, and shoot them in the arm with their needle, and I hid under the table and missed my turn of getting my shot. They didn't notice. I never got my shot in the second grade. And I think it was for measles or something, I believe. But whatever it was, I didn't get it. And all these years later, I'm still here. So
that's
holy crap! That was measles, mumps, rubella.
Yeah, something like that, probably. Yeah, and I didn't get it, so I'm good.
That's crazy that like Kevin could just like step out in the middle of class as a second grader and nobody notices. It's just
that's a true story, man. I think I've told this story maybe once or twice to a family relative or somebody like that. I never told it to my mom, so I hope she's not watching.
Oh, you're getting your ass whooped.
That's
I'm about to say, I'm not told to get my ass whooped by my mom, so.
Yeah, you're gonna.
And the second grade, Kevin just said.
That was, 50 years ago. So things have changed. So, but I'm afraid of needles, Davin and Pips. I don't know. I'm not gonna be first in line for this this thing because I'm afraid of needles, man.
I will say this. If President Trump had gotten a second term, I would not trust it as much, just because the way they were rushing it and everything, the way he lies about everything. But it's like, this is political, and I guess it's bullshit. But because it's like Biden, it's like, all right, I kind of trust it more now. Like they're naively, I think they're gonna follow the science. They're gonna tell us the truth because I know Trump is full of shit. Now, by the time it's needle time, Biden has a string of lies. Like if he's lying up there all the time like Trump, then I might be like, no, I'm not taking this shit. But
right. So. Well, Lisa in our chat room says, yeah, when we all grow a third eye or a fourth ear.
Well, I actually hope that's going to happen, because then I, like Kevin, will be a special event at the clubs, because Kevin juggles and does magic, so he's got that going for him. I just spit jokes, but if I had like a third eye or something, all of a sudden I'm a special event.
That's cheating, though. Oh, guy's not that good of a juggler. He got three eyes.
You should be better with three eyes.
He's cheating.
You should be a better juggler with three.
He got four eyes. He can see what he's doing. Always looking to complain, you know.
That's what. Listen,
I always looking to complain.
I hope if there's a nasty side effect, it's something I could capitalize on. That's all I ask.
Well, there will be. They just right now they just said you get headaches and you get sick and then you feel better after a couple of weeks, after they're saying. So who knows. But I don't even want to be sick for a couple of weeks. It's the whole thing. I'm like a skitty cat, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? We'll do it. We'll do it if it means we can actually have society again. Imagine being able to go to a ball game or eat in a restaurant or go to work, do our shows, and not, you know, have to worry. Like,
Davin, I think our careers come first before the ball game.
I don't know. I like going to ball games.
I can't wait to go see a baseball game or the Jets.
Well, no, not the Jets. I like professional. I like professional sports, but
yeah.
What I post online? I said the only team worse than the New York Jets is Trump's legal team. I think I posted that online.
That's funny. Good.
And then yesterday I posted. I go, I haven't seen a team from Washington lose this much since the Washington Generals. The Washington Generals, for those who don't know, were the patsies to the Harlem Globetrotters. So it was their job to lose. So that's what I'm saying. All right.
Did they win once, though? Did they ever win?
What was that meeting like? You know what, man? The white guy's got to win one time. The Harlem Globetrotters. We got to let Whitey win once. Don't throw the bucket of glitter at Whitey tonight. Don't pants him. But let's be honest. The Harlem Globetrotters, very talented, bunch of cheaters. Those games were not official games. You know, they're carrying, they're double dribbling. Very, very cheating. You can't do it. It was not regulation basketball.
I'm old enough to have seen Metalock Lemon and Curly Neal.
Oh, the greats.
They were the legendary players of the Globetrotters. And when I was a kid, they were the Globetrotters. And I got a chance to see them a couple of times. They were amazing entertainers. They were just so funny. Yeah. Or the refs, shorts down, confetti. You know, all the stuff's in my show right now.
Yeah. Kevin is a listen, if you can't see the Globetrotters, but you want to see one Baltimore Trotter, go see Kevin Lee.
By the way, I don't even know if they're still around anymore. Nothing's popular like when we were kids, stuff that was popular is not popular now.
No.
The kids have computers now. They would be bored watching the Globetrotters, you know?
Kevin brings all the fun of the Globetrotters with a fraction of the black men. So it's a much safer show.
Now with less black.
So, like, if you get nervous around black fellas, Kevin Lee's the show for you.
That was something they couldn't steal, though, right? Because white people stole everything. We had Soul Train, and then Dick Clark came out with his version of that. You know, American Bandstand, which is a ripoff of Soul Train or whatever. With the Jacksons, then they came out with the Osmonds. You know, mm-hmm. So everything. you know, was ripped off from black people. You know, we had a Little Richard and then, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, come on, it's all rip off. So.
I feel like you're I feel like you're selling the Hampton Globetrotters a little short. They're very nice. A bunch of rich fellas in cardigans who play ball from the Hamptons in Long Island. They're very good, Kevin. Don't sell them short.
Couldn't put together a white Globetrotter team, the Harlem, the Hampton Globetrotters.
The Hampton Globetrotters, they travel first class. It's very nice.
And they miss all their strats on purpose.
Well, they say it's on purpose. They're a feel-good team.
By the way, Kevin... By the way, Kevin, Lisa in our chat room said that she hears that men will develop extra sex drive from the vaccine. Maybe this is an incentive?
Yes, it is. Matter of fact, I would think I'd be first in line for this.
I need to get over that shot phobia if you heard that.
I want a little shot. It's going to hurt a little bit for a couple of days. Put some alcohol on it, you know. Take an aspirin, I'll be fine.
That was my line.
I'm lining up right now.
That was my line in college. It's gonna be quick, a little prick. It'll hurt for a few minutes. You'll be fine. Here's some alcohol.
I can use a little help in that department. Thank you.
All right, let's do our first story. We'll do some School of Fools. All right, this first story, it's kind of an interesting one. Well, they're all interesting, although that's why I pick them. But it's a little lengthy, but I'll get to a lot of things we can sink our teeth into. The Pasco Sheriff's Office in Florida has a secret list of over 400 students they believe could fall into a life of crime based on factors like whether they have gotten a D or an F in school and whether they've been abused or disciplined at school. It's been revealed. Both state and federal laws protect the records used by the sheriff's office to make the list comprised of students from Pasco County High and Middle Schools. Authority used data from both the Pasco County School District and the Department of Children and Families. Data from the district shows which students are struggling academically, have missed too many classes, or have been disciplined repeatedly at the schools. The FDCF data shows which children have been either victims to abuse or witnesses of household violence. Parents of the students are completely unaware of their child's presence on the list, the Tampa Bay Times reports. Children also have no indication that they are on this list. It's like Santa Claus's list. The existence of the list has been blasted by civil liberties groups as biased and a recipe for violating people's rights. The list was updated in October, according to internal emails obtained by the Times. The sheriff's office said in a written statement that the list is used to only help deputies assigned to the schools that offer mentorship and resources to students. They highlighted specific programs where school resource officers take students fishing and give others clothes when in need. According to the agency, the practice of getting the data from the school district dates back 20 years and is used to help keep campuses safe. Only a juvenile intelligence analyst and the school resources officer have access to the data and list of students, they added. The lists are also only comprised of students where the agency provides school resource officers, some 30,000 students and the county high school and middle school. Elementary schools are not included, even though some of them have armed guards. Some 32 deputies are placed at the various middle and high schools, costing the district $2.3 million a year to the sheriff's office. The district also shares its early warning system with the agency, which tracks grades, attendance, and behavior for students. Florida law enforcement agencies also use the Child Welfare Database, the Florida Safe Families Network, from the state DCF to investigate child abuse and to also search for missing children. Additionally, the law agency uses its own records to see which children have been the subject of custody disputes, have violated county curfew, have run away from home, and who've been caught with drugs or alcohol. They also look into which young people are friends with each other. The sheriff's office did assert that it has access to the data lawfully and added that it makes school resource officers get trained annually on federal student privacy law. The agency also sought to distance the list characterization as being one of potential criminals. But school officers and other deputies are required to read an 82-page intelligence manual that mentions efforts to find children that could become criminals on five separate occasions. Information from the various areas used to score the kids off 16 different criteria or categories, assigning students one of four labels: on track, at risk, off track, or critical. Little is required to get a student on the at risk section, including getting a D in a class or missing school three times. That's like in a marking period, I believe. At-risk children have been identified and monitored by the sheriff's office since at least 2011. During that summer, hundreds of at-home visits were conducted for at-risk kids. While they offered support for both the children and their families, school resource officers also questioned several about local crimes and arrested those who violated curfew or probation. The agency did assert that it looks for alternatives to arrest when possible. In the manual, officers are encouraged to work with students to find the seeds of criminal activity and to collect info that can help investigations. Often, student resource officers will hear about past, present, or future crimes well before others in the law enforcement community. School District Superintendent Kurt Browning told the Times that he was unaware of the agency using the school data to identify kids who could become criminals. Two high school principals also expressed shock. Browning did express that he wasn't concerned with the sheriff's office actions. We have an agreement with the sheriff's offices. The agreement requires them to use the data for law enforcement purposes. I have to assume that's what they're doing. He later added that if there's any need to revisit or any aspect of our relationship, we will do so. Experts in law enforcement and student privacy called the program highly unusual, adding that it stretched the limits of the law and was a misuse of children's confidential information. Also, the guy who came up with the science to determine this stuff, he's distanced himself from it. The guy's name is David Kennedy. He's a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and he described it as extremely weak as a justification. So that's the gist of it. This was my blog this week. I will comment briefly, and then you guys can jump in on this. I get what they're trying to do. But I think when you have secret lists that parents don't know about, that's a problem. Parents got to know. Also, I think this is another case where perhaps in a lot of these instances, a social worker should be the point of contact. If they're, you know, having to go into their home or mentoring and all, maybe this isn't really the police's job. Once there's a crime, in my mind, that's when you call the police in. But I don't want the police to be my first point of contact. And one of the things the article points out is, you know, this is going to, a lot of these kids already distrust the police. Then you put the police questioning about stuff like this, it's only going to make it worse. I think maybe their heart's in the right place, but I don't trust secret lists. I think the information can be easily obtained. We've seen too many hacking, too much stuff. I just think they need to do away with it. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, I got to ask the first elephant in the room question. Are these African-American kids?
I think a lot of the kids are minorities.
Okay, well, That sums it up.
Oh, here it is. Here we go. Federal data shows that in Pasco County, black students and students with disabilities are twice as likely to be suspended or referred to law enforcement. So they may not be in the list, but if you know, it stands to reason, they might be. So imagine if you had an African-American kid with a disability. Well, that kid's just going straight to jail.
So this program's not the Hamptons.
Yes, except they don't travel as well. That's just like the Hamptons.
Okay. No, I think it's. I think you hit it right on the nose. First of all, the first contact shouldn't be a police officer. That's why they have counselors, and that's why they have school teachers, and that's why they have parents. Hopefully, I think bringing the cops into it is a bad thing. Then it gives these kids intimidation. It gives the cops a reason to be more. You know, especially if this is, you know, areas where you have troubled kids, you know, minority areas where it's mostly African Americans dealing with cops. Where I know how that turns out, it's never a good thing, you know. So it's just a bad idea, very bad idea. And I think, cops doing a job that counselors should be doing and teachers should be doing, and definitely parents. No, hell no.
Well, I don't know if this is a teacher's job. And I could envision a scenario with these kids where the parents are the problem. So the parents might not be – like if the kid's being abused at home, which is one of the ways to get on the list, kids being abused at home, it's a problem. But I think – this is where I think a social worker – now, I'm not saying the cops can't be involved with that. I just don't know if the cops have to be the first ones. I don't know – you know, I don't know if you need the cops.
I don't think the cops should be involved, period. I mean, cops' job is – they have two jobs. serve and protect. And that's not serving in any way, and it's not protecting in any way.
Well, no, but no, it is protecting, and it is serving if a kid, if they feel a kid is a victim of abuse at home, well, then that is a scenario. Now, if a kid misses curfew, if a kid's getting bad grades, I don't know if we need the police involved with that. I got a D in a high school, I think, chemistry. It's a bitch. You know, anybody could get a D. You know, people miss class. What?
I was the king of D's.
Yeah, Kevin, the king of D's. I mean, some of the criteria is a little soft. Pip, what do you think?
Well, At first, I agree with you that I kind of see what they were trying to do, but this is a bad way to go about it, because if I were a parent, I would be pissed to know that there was a secret list, and, you know, if my kid was on it, especially if I was beating the crap out of them. No. I mean, this is a...
I told you to stay off the secret list!
How dare you tell on me, you little brat!
I know you didn't tell on me, but I told you to use cover-up and foundation, and now we're on a secret list! This is why I have to hit you! Why do you make me do this?
Oh, my God.
What?
Well, I mean, in instances where there certainly would be correlations between some of these aspects, you know, kids missing school, kids malnutrition, not being taken care of at home. I mean, there's certainly correlations between problems at home and some of these aspects that they're pointing out. However, bringing the cops in before there's actually something, it's a social worker kind of thing. If you want to go in and try to help students and help the situations that they might be getting into at home, or helping if they're getting off track, they need more guidance, they need more tutoring or something, then you need tutors, guidance, you need social workers. You don't want to be handing over this list, because if they're the school officer, you're handing over a list of kids that might be at risk to cops, and then the cops are going and questioning them. Why don't we just funnel the kids, especially the African-American kids, straight into the jail?
Yes! Yes! That's what I've been saying, Pip. Why don't we funnel the African-American kids straight to jail? I'll tell you what. We wouldn't have these shootings, and it cuts out the middleman. What an excellent idea. You are... brilliant. Now, and thank you for having the bravery to do it in front of Kevin, the Baltimore Globetrotter. The bravery. Thank you.
Listen, I'm not saying anything that he doesn't know. He knows about the whole for pay prison system and how far more statistically African American and other minority kids go to jail because the system is set up that way.
Yes,
they make money off
finally
everybody they get.
Pip, yes,
I'm
you
not
hit
saying
it.
Anything
finally,
Kevin won't agree with.
Pip, finally, you've hit. Finally, something in this country works. So often we're disillusioned that our systems don't work, but yes, the pay prison system works. If we could just cut out the middleman and get the African American kids straight to jail. First of all, you don't have to worry about classroom sizes then. If you just send the African American kids to jail, there's a lot more room for the white kids and the really smart Indian kids and the really smart Asian kids. Why didn't you run for president? Finally, somebody thinking outside the box.
Devin still talking about the Apollo set he's working on.
They would stand and applaud, because they wouldn't have to waste the time on lawyers, Kevin. No need for lawyers. You know how expensive legal fees could be? It could bankrupt any family if their kids would just go straight to jail. No lawyers. And you know what? It's good. They can get released when they're 18, and they can earn some money to contribute for rent. Pip hit the nail on the head.
Well, I mean, I think that we should just take away the facade of graduation day and just hand the African American kids their uniform, their flip flops, and the card they're going to use for their commissary. I mean, why don't we just call it what it is?
Hold on, we're
setting kids up to just put them straight in the jail.
I got it. You know what? We need to stop this show really quick, because President Trump only has like a month and a half left, 2 months left. There's still time to get you in the cabinet, Pip. With this type of forward thinking.
I'm just saying what this program sounds like to me.
No, no, don't walk it back. It's good. It's good. Don't walk it back. You're very forward thinking. This is very popular in a lot of areas. I like it. I mean, Kevin agrees, right, Kev?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's disappointing. That's very disappointing.
No, no, I'm just saying, this is something that looking at these things that are happening, why don't they just get more social workers? That seems to be the thing across the board. Social workers, not cops. They're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, it's just I think. Listen, I mean, there are accounts where the cops are doing good things. They're providing clothes. They're mentoring and all. These are good things. I just don't know if they're the ones who should be doing this. I mean, I'm not going to take the view that they're just doing it to get African-American kids to go to jail. I'm not going to take that view. I think, unfortunately, it might put a lot of kids on the radar before they need to be on the radar, which is the problem.
And statistically, that's more minority kids than white kids.
This thing gets
what I'm saying.
This list is a lot less icky if the parents are involved. If the parents get a call, go, listen, we have a way of tracking kids. You know, they're missing school. You know, they're getting bad grades. They're discipline issues. We all know about the permanent record. This is essentially the permanent record, but now the cops get it. I don't know.
That's what I mean. They're already looking at these kids anyway, unfairly. And now it's just going, here. Now, here's some more excuses for you to go and look at those kids. The kids that are at some disadvantage as criminals before you even try to help them.
Yeah,
you realize a lot of kids get D's and E's and F's or whatever, depending where you live, that come from these low-income families or rough neighborhoods. Is a reason for that, too, you know. That's why they're getting low grades, because of their situation, you know. But then if you look at a lot of successful, and I'm not talking about just athletes, but a lot of successful minorities who are now, you know, top businessmen or rich or whatever, they come from these neighborhoods too. Most black people that are rich, I'm just saying black, I know minority, whatever, that are rich, most black millionaires grew up poor. You know, you're not going to find a lot of black millionaires that were born into wealth. Most of them grew up middle class, or grew up poor or in a middle-class family and then somehow, you know, became successful. So I think that just jumping on these kids because they're getting D's and all that sort of stuff and bad grades is not necessarily a death sentence to them either.
I think it can be an indication that something is missing in the child's life. But again, I don't know if it's the police that need to be doing that. I'd rather see the teachers who are the teachers working with parents, working with social workers, trying to get a broader picture of what's going on. And then if we need to bring in the police, because it seems like they're getting into trouble and we want to cut it off before it gets to the next level. That makes sense. But I don't think the police should be the ones keeping this record. I don't think they should be the initial point of contact. I think there's a role for the police. I just think that the police are having too much of a role in this scenario.
Is it just because of their grades, like, or just because of their behavior? I'm saying because, like, let's say a rich, upscale neighborhood, you know, in the Hamptons, you know, those kids probably got good grades, but they're also bad as hell, too. You know, I mean, in their sense, they're probably getting A's, but they're also snorting coke in the bathroom, right?
No, I mean, listen, no.
But
you can get bad grades no matter what. I mean, good neighborhood, bad neighborhood.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, sometimes there's stuff going on at home you don't know about. Sometimes kids have an undiagnosed issue. Sometimes people are just stupid. There's all sorts of reasons. Just because you're getting bad, I think they're trying to look at the broader factors. But again, I don't really want to put that at the hands of the police to make that initial assessment. I have one question, Davin. What?
Suppose they got a cop. Suppose they brought a cop and got me because I hit under the table and didn't get my shot.
You know, I kind of feel like that was an opportunity missed.
That's called a callback, ladies and gentlemen.
you know what? They're on to you.
I feel
because you announced that on our show. They're watching you.
I feel like it was an opportunity missed. I feel like the police really should have been a little bit more hands-on in that situation. They should have dragged a second-grade Kevin Lee out of there because he was evading a needle.
Yeah,
Absolutely. And according to this scenario, with this little checkpoint, you're going straight to jail, little boy.
All right. So none of us really like this.
Okay. No, I think it's ham-handed. I mean, yes, it's good to try to, you know, spot kids in trouble so they don't slip through the cracks, but the way that they're doing it involving law enforcement, it's like, no. I think that we have enough law enforcement getting involved, in situations where they shouldn't be right now.
All right, let's move on to the next story while Pip unfreezes herself.
Yeah, I'm trying.
I understand. So this is about an anti-white letter going around. This is Megyn Kelly. She used to be on Fox News, and then she was on another show, a morning show, and that didn't work out. But anyway, Megyn Kelly said she yanked her two young sons out of their, quote, woke Upper West Side private school, where a letter allegedly circulated accusing white people of reveling in state-sanctioned depravity and comparing white children to killer cops. The offending letter made its round among the school's diversity group, which included Kelly and other white parents. What about the other? I hope it wasn't just diverse white people. But anyway, other white parents. Freckles, not freckles. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Blonde hair, brown eyes. Anyway, following the police-involved death of George Floyd in May, the former Fox News and NBC News host claimed, she acknowledged that while the school's far-left ideology doesn't jibe with her own view, she didn't really care. After years of resisting it, we're going to leave the city, she said on Monday's episode of her new podcast, The Megyn Kelly Show. The schools have always been far left, which doesn't align with my own ideology, but I didn't really care. Most of my friends are liberals. It's fine. I come from a Democrat family. I'm not offended at all by the ideology, and I lean center left on some things. Kelly went on to read directly from the letter written by Nalia Weber, executive director of the nonprofit Orleans Public Education Network, and posted on a blog titled, "If you really want to make a difference in black lives, change how you teach white kids." There is a killer cop sitting in every school where white children learn, the June 29th Post says. They gleefully soak in their whitewashed history that downplays the Holocaust of indigenous native peoples and Africans in the Americas. They happily believe that their all-white spaces exist as a matter of personal effort and willingly use violence against black bodies to keep those spaces white. Weber continues, "I'm tired of white people reveling in their state-sanctioned depravity, snuffing out black life with no consequences. Where is the urgency for school reform for white kids being indoctrinated in black death and protected from the consequences? Where are the government-sponsored reports looking to how white mothers are raising culturally deprived children who think black death is okay?" Kelly didn't identify her son's school on the podcast, but she recently spoke about the COVID-19 death of her son's music teacher, Don Sorrell, who taught at the collegiate school, a $56,000 a year, K-12 all-boys school just off Riverside Boulevard. All right, we don't need to know where it is. Kelly, it's on the Upper West Side, as they said, of New York. Bougie. Kelly, who has three kids, sons Thatcher and Edward and daughter Yardley. That screams white, I'm not going to lie. Those are very white names. Those are very white, Goyesha names. Claimed the school wanted the letter circulate to all the faculty as well. It's unclear if that happened. But with the letter, she said they've gone around the bend. They've gone off the deep end. Kelly, who said she's pulling her daughter out of her school, slammed Weber's opinions. Which boy in my kid's school is the future killer cop? Is it my boy? Which boy is it? The journalist asked. Because I don't happen to believe that they're in there. The collegiate school did not immediately return messages. Well, Kevin, I'll get your take on that first. What do you think of such a letter?
Was this a black thing?
Oh, no, I'll go first. Then fine, fuck you. I mean, you're the guest. I was going to let you go first, but go fuck yourself. I'll handle this. Listen.
Let me hear your Caucasian version first.
No, it's not the Caucasian version. It's the correct version. I think the sentiment on a lot of, I think there's some points hidden in there, and you know, I think a lot of places are trying to address that, teach a more correct history instead of a whitewash history. I think that would do us all good. I think it would do the country good if we taught our kids better. I was taught a white.
They couldn't stomach it. I'm gonna cut you off. They couldn't stomach the correct version of what you're saying. But go ahead.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's really been tried. So I can't. I think we're going to find out. I think it's going to happen. You're going to have a more historically accurate version. I mean, listen. Are they going to teach fourth graders about slaves being raped? No, but they shouldn't teach fourth graders about slaves being raped. But by the time you get to be a junior or senior in high school, yeah, I think you could start to talk about. You could start to go a little bit more in depth about what was going on in some of these plantations and how families were torn apart. You have to do it sensitive to the grade that the kids are in. You know what? A nicer version of the Pilgrims for a kindergartner isn't terrible. If you want to revisit that as a sophomore or junior. Then it's time to do it, because now people can think. They can take things in. You don't need to hear about the atrocities as a kid who's going to go home and have nightmares. So I think she has valid points. That being said,
sure.
This is very accusatory. This is not it's all about getting people on your side.
Right.
This is not the tone where you're going to get a bunch of people go, she has a point. They're going to go, fuck this bitch. Like Megyn Kelly did. You know, you're calling my kid? You're saying my kid doesn't care about black people? You don't know my kid. My kid hangs out with almost all black people. Or he plays on a mixed team. So she's got the wrong fucking tone. You're not going to win people over with that. So, and I would be very upset if this was being passed around at my kid's school and to faculty. I'd be outraged too. Again, not because there's not valid points, and we don't need to take a look at the curriculum and how we're educating our children. But it's very accusatory. Can you imagine? It kind of goes back to a little bit the discussion we were having before. Can you imagine a letter circulating goes, you know, we got to teach that all these black kids are going to be criminals, and you know, and it's from their history and everything. Can you imagine? No, these are children. We still have a chance to get to them. We still have a chance to build the country that we want to be. But if you're accusing every parent of raising kids that are insensitive to minorities or whatever, you're not going to get there. So I think Megyn Kelly has a right to be outraged. That was the correct version. Now, Kevin, you can have your version.
I want to hear Pip now. I'm going to answer. Pip, can you go next?
I was just thinking that when you're trying to change minds and you're trying to get people to see a different point of view, just like you said, you can't use such hysterical rhetoric as, you're raising killer cops. You need to reframe it in a way for, I mean, I think if you want to affect change, you know, bashing down the door is not necessarily going to change hearts and minds. You do have an opportunity here to say, listen, we have to reframe the curriculum the way that we treat history. We, you know, like you said, we're going to teach, you know, little kids about, you know,
let me pause you right there to give an example. So a lot of, we saw the Black Lives Matter movement really get a lot of support this summer for the first time from white people. As well as it should have, as more people were grasping. However, to go back to Pip's analogy of bashing down the door, when you turn around and you see the news covering some white people are eating outside and some black people, actually, it was a lot of white people at the time getting in their face, but whoever, getting in the face of people just eating, go, how could you do this? Support Black Lives Matter? No, it's not the way. You're losing support because it's not the way to do it. Now, go on. I was just giving an example of stuff we've seen.
Well, no, exactly that. I mean, because when you're, I don't even know how many years, our history is taught so Eurocentric, and we have to stop teaching people that America was found. There were people here already.
Yeah, but they were lost. But they were lost.
They're not lost.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. They're just wandering around, you know, big squaw in the sky. You know, Whitey King. Go, no. Here we are. Here's some smallpox. You teach us how to grow corn. It worked out very well.
Exactly that, though. I mean, because this is what really, we have to talk about what really happened in our country, not just propaganda so we make, raise good little soldiers, you know, and we have to talk about all of the things that make America great and things that were were terrible, and you know, and work together.
It's never been great for black people.
I'm sorry?
It's never been great for African Americans.
No, no, I know. And I'm saying working together towards making it a better place for everyone. You know, I mean, it's been so whitewashed, and so we have to change that. But saying, you're making killers, it's sort of like, you know, I mean, in Germany, you know, are they going to say, you're making little Hitlers? It's like, that's too hysterical.
Aww.
And even if I...
Oh, hold
Even
on.
If I would,
hold on. Let's stop and think about that. Little Hitlers would kind of be adorable. Little kids with little black mustaches. That'd be adorable. Like little 7 or 8 year old little Hitlers. Aw. All wearing matching uniforms. That's kind of sweet. Go on.
I don't think that there's anything sweet about it.
Aw, little Hitlers. Aw. You know, with their toy trains. That sounds cute. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that if we're going to move forward and we're going to see things the way that they are, the way we teach kids has to drastically change so that everybody starts on an equal footing. But you have to talk to people. You have to get people ready for this idea and to open them up to go, yeah, it has been pretty fucked up. You know, not just say, oh, you're bad, bad, top killer parents. It's like, I mean, you know, killer top parents.
I think the biggest thing is someone once said, it's like being an alcoholic. You got to admit you have a problem. Americans
yeah.
never admitted that they had a race problem. But we still won't admit it. I mean, I've had a dollar for everybody I've argued with on Facebook over the last 4 years that racism exists, and they told me I was out of my freaking mind.
But I think, there's always going to be people for whether ignorance or an agenda that are going to deny it. But I think this summer we saw more people recognizing that there is an issue. You know, unfortunately, George Floyd had to perish, which is ridiculous. But I think you saw a lot of people going, all right, I'm starting to get it. Listen, you saw a lot of these marches. There was a lot of white people out there. More white people than we've ever seen marching with
A lot of white people marching for the other black people that were killed by cops, too. I mean, that wasn't the first march or protest.
No, but that's what I'm
saying.
No, but what I'm saying is this summer we saw more white people. I mean, you go to some of these towns where it was all white because there's just not a lot of African-Americans in their communities. I mean, my can't think of her name right now. I talked about her a couple of weeks ago. The young woman in Kentucky who was killed in her home. What's her name?
Breonna Taylor?
Breonna Taylor. Yeah, in my town, which is a very, you know, predominantly white town, there's minorities, don't get me wrong, but they had a march for Breonna Taylor, and my daughter went to that, and I wasn't at the march, but I'm sure that was predominantly white, so it is changing.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. Yeah, well, yeah, it took a lot. You know what it was with the George Floyd thing, and a lot of white women voted against Trump because of the way he treated the George Floyd situation.
That was part of it.
And you know what it was? I listened to a panel of white women who said this. He called for his mother. That was the thing that really got women, you know, to go, whoa. I mean, he called for his mother while he was dying. And that touched a lot of white women.
Well, let's stop right there. Because seeing that hit them in the gut, whereas this letter saying that my kid is a potential white cop who's going to kill black people also hits in the gut for the very wrong reason.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. I agree, yes. I mean, that's yeah. But a lot of black people think that cops are killers. I mean, that's how black people think.
Right.
We don't see. It's so funny, Dad. And when I was a kid, my brother and I used to play cops and robbers. And we used to fight on who's going to be the cop. Because we wanted to be the cop because we were kids. Cops were good in our eyes. You know, we were fans of Starsky and Hutch and Beretta. We thought, you know, we wanted to be Starsky and Hutch. We wanted to be cops. Cops were heroes when we were kids. But what happens once you get a driver's license when you're black, by the time you get your driver's license when you're 16, by the time you're 21, you've been pulled over a dozen times just because you're black. Now you don't like cops because you know you're being fucked with. You know you're being picked on because of your skin color. So all that, cops are heroes when I was a kid, all that changes when you become an adult. So every time you see a cop, as an African-American, every time you see a cop, your gut turns. I don't care where you can be. He could be anywhere. He could be driving on the street. He could be in a patrol car. He could be, I don't care. Every time I see a cop when I'm out, I have that gut feeling. It's just something that goes in your stomach that just knocks up, you know? And it's a weird thing to have that. But I know they got a tough job. I know that what they do is not easy. And I know there's good police officers, as they say. But every time I see a police officer, and I was out today driving and saw a couple of, you know, driving down the road, and you get that knot in your stomach. That's something that you just can't explain, man, that other races don't get.
I get that, but that's not this. I mean, this is about affecting change in curriculum and the approach. That's what this is. I just think her approach is wrong. I'd be pissed off. I could understand why it would be somebody's final straw if this was being passed around to faculty and go, fuck it, I don't need my kid in this school. If that's what you really think, because our kids are friends. Our kids are playing together, playing sports together, doing whatever together. Our kids are better than us. A lot of our kids are better than us in that they really don't look at skin pigment and everything. And I get that, and if I'm a parent here, I go, I get that we need to do better, but you're accusing my kid, my child, of doing something my child has not done. You're saying my child is a bigot. You're saying my child wants to exclude people because they're black or whatever, or Latin or whatever. You don't know my child. It's very offensive. I think... I don't know this woman who wrote it. I don't know her affiliation with the school. But if she is affiliated with the school in any way, I would call her into the car and go, no, you're not passing the nurse around the faculty. You need to take some sensibility training because you're not getting what we're trying to build here. All your valid points were diminished by accusing our student body of horrible things. Is there a chance there could be one of these bigots in the class? Yes, but we're trying to work for change, and this is just going to make us more divided. That would be my approach.
And notwithstanding what Kevin was just saying, I mean, yeah, I think that it's been a wake up call to white people to hear the stories, heartbreaking stories to me, about how every African American parent has to sit down and have the talk with their kids. That's not a life that I've lived through. You know, that's not something that, you know, privilege, you know, people, God, it makes me so mad when people don't understand what the point is of saying we have white privilege. It doesn't mean that you grew up with a silver spoon in your mouth. I mean, I didn't, but I know that I had white privilege just because, you know, if I walked into a store, nobody was following me around, you know? I got a lot of things and still get a lot of things just for being a white woman. And when people just, I mean, are you so dense you don't get that? That just really irritates me. But having said all that, you know, I mean, we're aware of our, a lot of people are now coming to be aware of our white privilege. I get that. It's still a problem, but they're really going at this the wrong way. Like Davin said, our kids are playing together. You know, they're better than we were. The United Colors of Benetton, that was a ridiculous thing when we were coming up, but now it's the truth. You know, kids don't see things the bigoted way that, you know, people coming up with us did. I remember my best friend was dating one of the very, very few African-American guys that was in our school. And they walked into their prom, and all these people started singing Ebony and Ivory at them,
oh.
and not in a kind way.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I mean, but we lived in white bread land, and they thought that this was okay. And Nigel, who was the guy who she was dating, he was like the class clown. He was smart. He was a good egg. And he let it roll off his back, but it was hurtful. It was really fucking hurtful. And I can't imagine that happening today in one of the schools.
I feel bad now because I did that to an interracial couple in the front row one time. I start singing Ebony and Ivory.
Oh, they're at a, you know what? At a comedy show is a at a comedy show that's a different thing.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's a different thing because I was thinking, I could never do that. Can you imagine?
Gavin, you can't do everything that we do.
I can't juggle. That's all. That's the only thing you can do that I can't do. But can you?
Okay. So for example, Gavin. Okay, yeah, but you could do interracial jokes and get away with it.
Let's see. Could I now? I don't think if there's a black and white couple not bothering anybody sitting in the front row, I could burst into Ebony and Ivory. And I get away with a ton of shit. I get away with more shit than most comics do.
Really? Of course you could get away with
no,
shit.
No, Kevin, I don't think I
think so.
I don't think I could. Because you know why?
I got attacked one time by a white girl. You know the room, Cosby's, Newport News.
Mm-hmm.
I'm performing there, and I'm on stage. It was an interracial couple in the front row, and I kept calling the brother OJ.
Oh, Jesus.
And the woman got up. She was drinking a beer in a cup and a glass, and she got up, and she threw her beer on me, right in the middle of my set. And I had on a nice suit, and it got drenched in beer. She got escorted out of the club, but yeah, he threw a beer on me. He was fine. He was laughing at it and everything. The audience was laughing. He was laughing. She was not enjoying the O.J. Simpson running gag.
Same. It's fun. Kevin, it's fun.
She's the one that gets carved up on the front lawn, though. You get that, right?
Yeah. Funny, Kevin. Interesting you say that. Same comedy club, Cosby's. On one of the few times I ever had the issue with the joke, I used to have a joke about DMX, the rapper DMX, and it was an applause break joke. And one of the lines in the joke is, he's going, "Where my niggas at? Where my niggas?" It's one of the lines from the so there's this in their 30s, 40s, I don't know, black and white couple. You know, the woman's white and fat, of course, because that's the stereotype. But anyway, it is. I'm sorry, it is. But anyway, she complained.
Where's my black husband?
You got a rock. You got a rocker husband. Those were the options. You went black or rocker. Yeah. You could have had the guy from In Living Color. What do you want me to tell you? Anyway. He's very handsome. But anyway.
Oh, no, I'm down with Corey.
In the same club, that white woman complained that I used the N-word. And it wasn't nigger, it was nigga, and it was part of a joke, and then I got in trouble. She didn't get escorted out, but I got in trouble. Like, I got banned from the club for a while from doing that joke. And I had done that joke before in that club, and nobody ever complained. And you know who the owner is, and I got in trouble for that, Kevin. So we are playing by different rules, and people are reading what we do differently. I still contend there. I couldn't do that OJ thing now, especially not now. I mean, especially not now with where the country, everybody's very sensitive, and it's a good thing to race.
Who can do anything anymore? I mean, nothing. What can we do anymore?
I mean, listen, we're feeling it out. I'm still pushing boundaries. I would still, if I thought I had a joke that was worth it, I would still drop the N-word in a joke. Because I know I could get away with it. I just don't. It's just not something I want to talk about right now. So I'm not doing it. I haven't done it for a while. But I can't. And I do a lot of crowd work. Kevin does a lot of crowd work too. I can't imagine seeing a black and white couple. First of all, it wouldn't even cross my mind. But I can't imagine serenading a couple minding their own business with Ebony and Ivory. I think everybody would look at me, the white comic, as a complete racist douchebag. No matter how much I was smiling.
Well, that was the thing. All of these kids that were serenading my friend and her boyfriend were all white kids. And he was one of the very few African Americans in school. So, and this was in the 80s. And it was not, and they were not doing it like at a comedy show where everybody's just rolling with the punches. They were being mean.
Here's how I could get away with it. Because in the scenario I described, I assumed the audience was predominantly white. If the audience was predominantly black, and I did Ebony and Ivory, I could get away with it. And I bet the black audience would support me, and they'd be hooting and hollering and be supportive like black audiences can be. Because I think they would go, oh, it's cool. First of all, they would say, it's ballsy of me to do this in that room, whereas opposed to if it's all white audience, I'm being a bully and a douchebag. Yeah, it all depends.
Yeah, I think
what, Kev?
The white people need to get their shit together.
No, you know what? Listen, white people are afraid. Listen, some white people are racist, not a lot, but enough. Some white people are racist, and a lot of other white people are afraid of being called racist.
You think not enough? I think there's like 72 million of them.
Well,
oh, yeah.
All
right. 72 million of them didn't give a shit about me or the country.
Yeah, but then listen. You got African Americans who supported Trump. I mean, listen, it's not a black white thing.
Yeah, and there was African Americans who loved their slave owners too. So,
listen, Kevin, you can call them Uncle Tom and go that route, but I can't. I mean, you know,
you can. They're Uncle Toms, man.
Kevin, Kevin, if I call black people like that Uncle Toms, I'm gonna have black people, whether they're an Uncle Tom or not, looking at me sideways. There's just certain things I can't say that you can. And you see me on stage enough, I'll pretty much fucking say everything.
The most confusing thing to me is black Trump supporters, man. I can never put my finger on. I've argued and fussed with black Trump supporters for the last year now. The only thing that the ones that I know that had anything in common was there were guys who were were doing well financially.
Yeah, but that, I mean,
yeah.
Listen.
And I think that was the pattern. But I look, what is the black Trump supporters that I argue with on Facebook all the time? They're all guys who are in a different tax bracket. They're doing okay for themselves. You know what I mean? Mm. That was it. They only cared about their dollar. They only cared about their tax break. They didn't care about nothing else. They didn't care about the racism or.
But I'm gonna broaden that out, and then we'll move on. There are a lot of people on either side, whatever side is, that are single issue voters. So what you were talking about African Americans and their single issue in their mind, they feel they're going to do better financially under Trump, and that's all they're focused on. Where, you know, I tend to be a multi-issue person. I tend to look at a broader picture. But, I mean, that's what it is. So a lot of times people will excuse stuff, behavior, policy that they wouldn't normally excuse. But if they think, well, this person's really going to do this one thing I like. I mean, that's the evangelicals. The evangelicals were all about abortion. You know, they are willing to overlook everything else if they get the judges they want. So I think you were dealing with single and also African Americans. Tend to be very socially conservative. So they might be looking at the financial aspect of it, and because they're very religious, a lot of them, so they're socially conservative. They're not as tolerant. Kevin's tolerant. Kevin's in show business. We're different breeds. We have to get along for the most part with everybody, although there's really ultra-conservative comedians, and I always wondered myself, how do you survive? You must work in a very narrow range, because if you do this the way Kevin and I do this, traveling all over the place, running into all sorts of people, it's very hard to maintain, at least outwardly, any type of bigotry, stereotype, or prejudice. Because you just run across everybody, whether they be in the audience, or the clubs where you're working, or the talent you're working with. It's very hard to be, I hate gay people, I hate Jews, I hate this, I hate that. Because you're just going to run across them, and if you give them any time, you go, oh, they're people, like me. And then you get past that shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's what it should be, is that everybody just goes, oh, you're people like me. You know,
Joe and I had the argument we often have last week where Joe will say that I'm the sheltered one. You know, Joe always calls me the shelter. And I'm the guy who travels all over the place. I'm the person who has friends from all over the world. And I've truly said this. It helped. I don't know about you, Kevin. You can speak to this. But traveling like we do, it has made me a better person. Because I can even talk to the white person who might be racist, but I can have that conversation with them and at least see where they're coming from. I don't have to agree with that. I don't have to want to hang out with it, but I can understand it. So it makes me better. A lot of times, it's like, in my case, being Jewish, they've never met a Jew before. When Kevin rolls into town, it's not because of bigotry. They've never met a black person before. They've seen one on TV, whether it be the news or Fresh Prince or whatever show they're watching, but they've never met one. And then you talk to Kevin or you talk to me, go, oh, they're just like me. They have a family. They like to go to Taco Bell. You know, it's all the same shit. What do you think?
I was hanging out in Florida, 3 weeks ago, with some hardcore Trump supporters after my show. I mean, hardcore Trump supporters. These guys that I was hanging with, if I wasn't a comedian and they can get away with it, they would hang my ass. But on that night, I was their boy. You know, they loved my show so much. They wanted to buy me a beer. They wanted me to hang out with them. They wanted me to drink with them. You know, for that night, we were like this. The next morning when they woke up, if they see me, they wouldn't piss on me if I was on fire, you know? But that night, you know, going back to what Davin said, but what we do, we touch people, you know, and we travel the world. We meet people and who otherwise probably wouldn't hang out with a Jewish guy or a black guy. But because of our talent, we knock down walls, even if it's for 5 hours or 3 hours or 2 hours that night. They see our set for 45 minutes or an hour, and then they want to buy your merchandise and hang out with you and take pictures, you know, and all that sort of stuff. The next morning is a different deal, you know. But they don't hang out. They wouldn't want to hang out with you the next morning. But that night in the comedy club, because you made them laugh so hard and enjoy themselves, you're their buddy, you know?
I mean, honestly,
That disconnect, I don't understand. What goes on in their brains that after they were having a great time with you and buying you a beer and it's like we're all buds, why the next day would they walk into you, whether they recognized you as the comedy guy or not, why would they give you shit in the convenience store? You know what I'm saying?
I don't think most people...
What is that?
I don't think it's...
It goes back to this. So let me say this real quickly. Me and my brother and I were at a Ravens football game some years ago. That's back when Ray Lewis was a big star. We're at the Ravens game. We're tailgating, and a drunk white guy in a Ray Lewis jersey, called me the N-word. You're wearing a Ray Lewis jersey. You're on your way to a football game to watch a mostly black men run a football and hit each other. But, you know, but because the alcohol got into you, I'm an N-word. You know, so it's just, it's, you're in a, entertainers and athletes, you can be the most racist person in the world, but you're still going to love Michael Jordan. You can be the most racist person in the world, you're still going to love an athlete or a singer. You know, Spike Lee made that point in the movie Do the Right Thing when the guy was like, Spike, why are you always using the N-word? But you like Michael Jackson and Prince. Well, Michael Jackson and Prince aren't niggers. That's what he said, you know, that line in the movie. So, because they can sing, he likes their music. You listen to Michael Jackson and Prince, but you don't like other black people, you know. It's weird.
Well, I mean, human beings, and then we'll move on. Human beings, I think, have a very a way to compartmentalize. So I can go to Kevin Lee's show and not really have a lot of experience with black people or not particularly like black people, but I like Kevin Lee. I like Kevin Lee so much, I want to be on his mailing list, I want to buy his merch, I want to see Kevin Lee again. Because Kevin Lee is cool. Kevin Lee's fun. He's not like my asshole neighbor who happens to be a black guy who doesn't mow his lawn, this, that, the other. They can compartmentalize. They can compartmentalize while instead of going, well, I like this person, I don't like this person, they can make it race thing. Kevin is one of the quote-unquote good ones. He's different.
Right. Right.
I have a confession real quickly. I used to love Trump on The Apprentice.
Oh, yeah, I used to watch the show. I never loved Trump.
I was a Trump fan at one point. I used to be a street performer years ago when I was a teenager in Atlantic City on the boardwalk. That's how I made my living. I used to drive up to Atlantic City and perform on the boardwalk. And I used to look at the Trump Towers and at the hotels. And you know, I was like, wow, man, this Trump guy, you know, he was a hero to you know, because he was a billionaire, you know, and all that stuff, you know. And, you know, but now he's an asshole. So, yeah, I get it.
All right, let's move on. Nice segue to Trump. A group of Harvard University students circulated a petition aimed at keeping Trump administration officials from teaching, attending, or speaking at the Ivy League school, but not everyone was on board with their, quote, progressive agenda, according to the report. The petition drafted last week by students at the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences got a less than enthusiastic reception by those attending the Kennedy School of Government and the Business School, Fox Business reported. Sources with direct knowledge of the matter told the outlet that petition organizers later changed the wording in the petition to say that Team Trump officials should be held, quote, accountable before they set foot in the prestigious institution. The change in the language in the documents what was likely the result of the opposition to the original, the people told the network. The Kennedy School Students Council struck down the petition. People with direct knowledge of the matter told Fox Business. A few other conservative students and I made the point, we can't just target Republicans. That isn't what the Kennedy School stands for. Carter Estes, a Kennedy School student, told the outlet. Harvard has hosted a number of controversial guests over the years, like a fellow from the Palestinian Liberation Organization. So we should make broadly applicable guidelines that apply to every speaker, not single out Trump appointees. One student who signed the petition said in a group chat reviewed by Fox Business that Trump officials should be shunned by all policy schools. Meanwhile, students at the Harvard Medical School and Divinity School reportedly have approved the petition in the latest form. Harvard told Fox Business that it was aware of the student petition. Beyond that, we have no comment. The petitions are an outgrowth of efforts by far-left progressives like, quote, squad member Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to urge businesses and universities to blacklist anyone who worked in the Trump administration. For the Harvard petition to be implemented, the various student councils need to vote on the measure, which would go before school administrators, including Harvard University President Lawrence Bacow, who decides whether it becomes policy. Alan Dershowitz, a Felix Frankfurter professor of law emeritus at Harvard, told Fox Business that the petition is part of an alarming trend in schools where administrators give in to students. I will challenge any ban that may be enacted by asking to speak at the school. I will not kowtow to this new McCarthyism, he said, adding that if the petition becomes policy, he'll represent pro bono any Trump official seeking to set foot at Harvard. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, a Harvard law grad, said she hoped school administrators rebuke the movement. Academic community should be bastions of free speech. I will happily walk back on campus and challenge this. You know, I got to say, where did Kevin go? Oh, Kevin lost it. I guess Kevin's
right here.
Oh, there he is. I understand what a lot of these Trump officials have done, that you might not want them on the campus. And there are certainly reasons why you might not want to have, say, a Stephen Miller, you know, who is essentially a white nationalist and is responsible for a lot of these horrible, you know, immigration policies, in my opinion. But to make a broad thing that you can't have any Trump officials, that they can't even attend, they can't even pay the tuition and attend the school, it's a little much. They need to slow their roll. And I don't know what held accountable means. What does that mean? Pay a fine? A slap on the wrist? Say, my bad? What does that even mean?
Go to a trial for war crimes? I mean, you know, like, if you're saying that somebody needs to be held accountable for criminal activity, yeah. Absolutely, you want to like hold that in abeyance before you have them at your policy school. But if you're talking about, you know, you feel that you have moral or political feelings against the things that they did while they were in their office, that's different. That doesn't necessarily mean that you should be in the business of saying, yeah, no, you can't come here and talk to people. No, no, no. I mean, that's really being hypocritical. You're supposed to be open to listening to their ideas. You don't have to agree with them. They don't have to buy into them at all.
They don't even want them attending. Forget about teaching or speaking. You can't even attend. Banned. It's too
banned.
Much. It's too much.
Well, you know what? I get it. I mean, he was that toxic. I mean, he was that toxic in his... People that affiliated with him are very toxic. And why would you want that? I mean, I'm going to put it on a different level. There are comedians that I know that are Trump supporters I won't even work with anymore down the road. I don't want to be around them. some of these guys I've been arguing with over the last 4 years, I don't even want to be around them. I know where they stand. I know what type of humans they are now. They've been exposed. I don't even want to share the stage or green room with some of these guys, Gavin. So I get it. I mean, that's on a smaller level.
But that's a much smaller level. That's a personal choice. So you can make the choice, I'm not going to take a course taught by somebody from the Trump administration. But this is like saying you can't even go to school. You don't even have a right to make a living. Anybody in the Trump administration, it's just too broad. I get and listen, let's be honest. If a school could get Donald Trump to speak, you'd want to have Donald Trump to speak, because you know why? He would have to answer questions. If he's going to speak in front of all the students, they're going to have an opportunity to ask questions. So, yeah.
That's a bad example. He's not going to answer any questions.
Then he can't speak.
He's going to charge a lot of money to come to that campus, and he's going to say what he wants to say. Trump speaking tour is not going to do very well, Devin.
No, a Trump speaking tour will do very well. But I'm saying, if you're going to speak at a university, you have to answer questions from the students is much different than saying, no, you can't come to the university. One is opening dialogue and another is shutting it down before it even starts.
Yeah. I mean, there might be reasons why particular people in the administration should, perhaps not be allowed. I would really have a problem with Steve Bannon coming and speaking at anybody's school, because he's just, I don't know.
Exactly.
Now I'm doubling back. Right. I mean, I'm doubling back on what I was saying before, because I'm thinking about individuals that are just so heinous to me. I mean, Bannon,
Lansley,
Miller.
Hold on, Pip. Pip, last week we had a story about a school from San Francisco that wanted to talk to a terrorist. A terrorist! I mean, listen, college is where this happens. I'm not going to put huge bans, Now, listen, if they're inviting Bannon to teach a class, I might protest that. I might petition, go, I don't want Bannon to teach a class here. But that's much different than I don't want Bannon to speak here, and I don't want Bannon to be able to take a class here. You got to differentiate,
So you're going to bring in David Duke? Or you're going to bring in Farrakhan, which I know you're not a fan of. I mean, come on.
If I'm at a university,
and Farrakhan speaks at colleges, by the way.
Right. Listen, if it's my university, I'm going to take the temperature of the student body. There's going to be parameters that I am going to set up. If I'm running the school, listen, I'm not going to say no, you can't speak, but you are going to have to abide by these things. You can't say any racial slurs. You can't say anything anti-Semitic. You're going to have to can't say anything homophobic. You are going to have to answer questions from our student body if they are there to listen to you speak. Those are my kind of parameters. So I'm not saying no, but there's conditions. But I would
maybe what you just said, you can't hire David Duke.
Then that's fine. If David Duke cannot adhere to my parameters, that's fine. He has the opportunity. He can either do it or not do it. Listen, everything in life, there's rules to play by, just like any club. Listen, you got to play this club, but you can't say the F word. No, I have to say the F word. Well, guess what? I can't play the club then. It's just that simple.
Well, here's one of the things, is that with schools, I'm going by my own experience, that they're paid by the part of the college tuition is for a fund that pays for speakers and different programs. And if it's going to be my tuition money, I don't fucking want David Duke anyplace near the college campus.
Right, but there's another student who's paying tuition who does. So
but can Hitler come and speak to my school?
No, because he's dead. Hitler can't speak because he's dead.
If he had lived and he was out of jail now,
no, because he's old and he's slurping soup. So
but for real, if somebody wanted to invite Hitler to speak at your school,
as far as I'm concerned, yeah. As far as I'm concerned, yes, again, with parameters. You can't be going all Heil Hitler up there on my school. But if you want to speak, and you can't be speaking about superiority of races. Now, if you're going to talk about military strategy, if Hitler's going to talk about military strategy, that's something I want to hear. You know, because up until it went tits up, he was actually a brilliant military mind. So yeah, there is value. There is value in it. But again, my rules.
But what the hell would David Duke, for example, have to speak about if it wasn't about his, belief that
I don't know.
White race is the one race? What would he have to offer? His lasagna recipe? What the fuck does he have to say to send anybody?
But David, David Duke is probably somebody who I would not have speak because he has nothing to offer, as you said. But people from the Trump administration, whether they're talking policy or experience in working for government, there are things they can talk about. There are things that they can talk about. David Duke, I can't think of a reason. Hitler, I came up with a reason. You know, I'm having a hard time with Farrakhan to think of a reason, why he would, because he's just so, but I'm sure there are things, I don't know enough about Farrakhan, but I'm sure there are things he could talk about besides anti-Semitism and being a racist douche. I'm sure he has other things he could talk about. Maybe organizing a Million Man March. Maybe he could talk about that. I don't know. So what I'm saying is, if your only qualification is you're a racist douche, if that's all you have to offer, then no, I don't need you. If you're going to be there and you could talk about something else and you could take questions from the audience, then yeah, there might be of some value to it for somebody. Now, a lot of people might not want to hear Hitler talk, even if it is about military strategy, and that's okay too. And they can protest him, and they can make their voices known, or they can attend the talk and grill him afterwards. That's fine too. It's all part of the same thing, free speech.
That's scary that somebody, if he was alive and able, that people would show up to see him speak. That's scary.
I mean, he looked
good.
And people would,
and that's sad. That somebody would actually go hear him speak.
I mean, what would it be, like 150? You want to take that opportunity. You don't see a lot of 150-year-old men in snazzy suits like that. He's up about. He's the only one who could still wear the mustache. I want to know, what's it like wearing that mustache? Nobody else can do it. I have questions.
Well, here's the thing, is that I would love to see Satan give a talk, because I'd love to hear what makes him tick. If this was an individual that actually existed, however, I would feel crushed if I was the person that could offer a speaking tour for Satan, that there would be any impressionable minds that would go, I'm starting to dig what this guy's laying down. I don't want to be responsible for that.
Why am I losing you guys? Okay, what happened?
Your internet.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, we're still hearing you, but your internet froze again. So you guys got to come in or whatever. You got to hit the link again. All right, I'm going to move on to the next story. So this is one I called "Who's Your Daddy?" A transgender man who fought for years to be recognized as his child's father has lost his legal battle in the United Kingdom after the Supreme Court declined to hear his final appeal. Freddie McConnell, 34, has lived as a man for more than 10 years, but kept his female reproductive system and gave birth to a baby in 2018 after suspending hormone treatment, The Guardian reported. When a hospital refused to list him as the baby's father, he went to court to challenge who can legally be considered one, but he lost his case in the High Court in September 2019, and then again when he went to the appeals court 7 months later. They ruled that even though he was considered a man by law and had a gender recognition certificate, he could not be listed on the birth certificate as the father or parent, The Guardian reported. Ironic. Here he appears on the birth certificate as the child's mother. McConnell took his battle to the country's highest court, but announced Monday that the justices had decided not to consider his final appeal because the applications do not raise any arguable point of law which ought to be considered at this time. In the wake of this decision, McConnell called for an overhaul of the laws surrounding legal guardians and vowed to take the case to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, France. The law around birth registration doesn't treat LGBT people equally on any level, he said. There needs to be a series of cases to address this or a change in the law. I feel I am too deep in this to stop now. I'm going to keep fighting and ask anyone who can contribute to this to reach out. Kevin, are you trying to get back on?
Yeah, I'm trying. It just says connecting.
All right.
I don't know what happened. I need to move to a different room.
All right. Well, you're still on the phone, so you could still contribute.
All right, here we go. All right. Let's see.
We'll get your visual. We'll get you up visually soon. You know, this is where this is where we are. It's like very weird now. You know, personally for me, I don't see the big deal. It's like, who cares what's on a birth certificate? Let him be the mother. But it's very confusing for this child. You know,
I think that I'm looking at it from a legal standpoint. Not that I'm a lawyer, but I'm just saying that if there's something that you are now, you know, because years ago there wasn't an ability to change one's gender. Now there is. So we want to be going forward. I don't understand what. Why one would need to go back and change their birth certificate, because that was something that was issued at a point in time and going by what was at that time. And a birth certificate, the point of it is to try to figure out, when they're saying the mother or father, they're trying to point out that genetically who produced the materials needed to make this happen. So
point.
This person biologically was born a woman, had the reproductive functions of a woman, and presumably provided the egg for this child. So that's the point on a birth certificate of saying, who's the mother? And the father is who provided the semen, if we're going to lay it out that flat. So I kind of don't understand why the need to change the birth certificate. Now, if there was some kind of piece of paper that said right now, what is your familial relationship, now you're the father. Fine. What kind of is the point in going back and changing the birth certificate, though?
Maybe
point of pride.
Can I what, Kevin?
Yes.
Can you hear me, Gavin?
Yeah, I can. You're
okay.
Yeah, I can.
All right. I called in on my phone because something happened to my computer here. So.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'm on the phone now, on my cell phone Zoom, because I don't know what happened to my tablet here. Kind of.
You're coming in good. You're good. You're good.
As long as you can hear me, fine.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can
see and
you.
On the Zoom picture, does it say that his audio is on?
Yeah, no, it's working.
Okay.
So as long as you guys can hear me, I can see you, Chip. I see Davin. Okay, I see you guys. All right. Cool.
Well, I mean,
I can see you.
I mean, right. Kevin's Kevin's microphone is up.
That never happened before. In the middle.
I mean, Kevin's microphone is up. It's not really registering loud.
It happens. Okay. It's like a live show.
You know what? You know what? Well, you know what? We're going to take a break in a few minutes. We got one more story after this. You could try to, like, reconfigure it after this.
Yeah.
Reconfigure. I don't know. Yeah, it does seem to be, I guess, about this guy. It does seem to be about him and everything. I don't know if this is really unequal treatment. I mean, you have a point. You know, it's for a point in time. At the time, you know, yes, you were living as a man, but not so much where you didn't want to birth this child. I mean, if you really want to live as a man and keep up the man thing, you could have given your egg to somebody else, maybe, and have them birth the child. It just, you know what? Honestly, I wouldn't give a shit. I don't care. but I guess the court has to make some type of stand. But really, if you're the judge looking at this, you go, really? We're going to court for this? Is this really that big of a fucking deal?
It's just, as a cis woman, I'm not part of the community. I consider myself an ally. I don't understand, and I mean, that's my problem. I don't understand. But I'm just saying, as just like, as a rule of order, if I don't, I understand the need for one to, you know, present themselves to the world in the way that they feel comfortable, what they want their gender to be, what they believe their gender is. I'm probably not using the correct language. I'm stumbling through this. But my point is that if you want me, Davin, if you want me to call you she from now on, if that's your preferred pronoun, I'm picking on you. I will call you she. If that's your nothing else changes, but I'm calling you she now. Fine. I'm not going to go back and change your birth certificate because at the moment of your birth, you were labeled a man and that's it.
No, I'm not
going to go back and change your daughter's birth certificate and say now you're the mom. What the fuck?
I don't want you to call me she. I would like you to refer to me as your Lord and Savior. That is how I would like to be.
I can't do that. You know I'm an atheist.
But it's my preferred term. Yeah,
I'm sorry. We'll have to argue about this off camera because now.
Yes, I am Pip's Lord and Savior.
I love atheists.
Thank you,
Kevin.
I'm a believer, but I find atheists the most interesting people on the planet, and I have some wonderful conversations with. I have a few friends that are atheists.
I'm not
a militant atheist. I'm not going to hunt you down and change your thoughts. This is what works for me.
Kevin, I have good news for you. Comedy's slow. If you wish to be an Uber driver and pick Pip up, she will talk your ear off. You will have a very long conversation with this atheist right here, I assure you.
you'll hear all about it, huh?
Yeah. All right, let's.
I just talk about anything to cab drivers because I can't resist.
No, let's do our final story before our break because Kevin's visual is having issues. We just went down Kevin's ear canal.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back on my computer. I think because I'm on my phone, and I think it won't let me get on the computer because I'm on the phone. So I can't be connected to both. I think maybe that's what the problem is.
That's weird. But you were on both.
You can hear and see me. Okay, it's back up again.
All right.
Oh, what's going on? This is weird. I do Zoom shows like every week. This is the first time this has happened.
Of course. It's our show.
All right. Let's
I'm going to say Davin's shows now. You should have brothers on it. That's probably what's going on.
Well, we do have rules. All right. A New York City restaurant and lot.
One black man per year on Davin's Den.
Well, we have quotas, and we met it today, so we don't have to do... Pip, thank God we don't have to deal with this until next November. Thank God.
Thank you, Black Sir, for kicking off that equal opportunity checklist that we have.
We are just checking
I'm
lists.
I'm glad to be your Sammy Davis Jr.
You are.
You're Jewish, too?
I'm atheist.
A New York City restaurant and live music venue has said it will charge diners to take a rapid coronavirus test before being allowed to eat inside 2 days a week. Guests who want to sit in at City Winery in the Meatpacking District will be required to prepay $50 per person for the test while making an online reservation. The pilot testing program will launch on Tuesday, what may be the first of the metropolis, the New York Post reported. A COVID-19 test is one of the only solutions to get patrons inside restaurants for the next 5 months until the springtime, founder and CEO Michael Dorff said in a press release. Given the change of seasons, finding the next level of safety and comfort for people to dine indoors is critical for us today. Would-be diners will be given a wellness check, then a nasal swab by a health professional upon arrival at the door and can have a drink while they wait for the 10 to 15 minutes for results. If the test comes back negative, they will be admitted into the restaurant where standard mask wearing and social distancing rules will still apply. Positive test results will be sent to a lab to be verified, and the patron will be turned away. The new measures will only be in place on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The rest of the week is open, test-free, and outdoor seating is also available. Jambands.com reported that all of the venue's employees will also be required to test negative before coming into the restaurant for their shift to ensure that everyone on the premises has tested negative that day. The full $50 fee for guests are required to pay for the test goes directly to the testing company. City Winery's press release stated the venue already conducts temperature checks, sanitizes tables and chairs between each party, and offers correct contactless dining. The pilot scheme comes as New York recorded 5,282 cases on Wednesday. That's last Wednesday, bringing the city total 579,000. All right. So everything's on the rise. So I put this up as one of our poll questions for this week, and we got a lot of responses. And it was 100% nobody would pay for this. 100% like, no.
No way.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. So that was pretty.
We've never had poll results like that where everybody agrees.
No.
That's crazy.
But, you know,
our audience never agrees.
But here's the thing. Like, my first instinct would be like, no, I'm not doing that. But then if I think about it, if I really want to get a test and I can't get a test, it's not a bad way to get a test.
Well, that's true because, you know, Mr. Helix had a run in with his boss, actually, who had been exposed. And turns out that everybody's negative. Everything's fine. But there is a COVID testing place near us that it used to be you could just drive up and get it. And now, because the numbers are ramping back up, now you have to get an appointment. And, you know, people are waiting a few hours, and that's not unexpected, and that's not reasonable, but yeah, you'd be guaranteed to get the test there. But I would put my health insurance to pay for this crap. I don't want to lay out $50. I mean, maybe I'm just cheap, but on the other hand, I'm so desperate to go out and see music. Maybe I would tack that on and just consider it a Ticketmaster type fee, a really exorbitant one, you know, because it's like, oh, God, if I could just go and be in a room, hey, Elvis, if I could just go and be in a room where I could see music again and know that nobody has COVID.
But you don't know. But you don't know. You don't know.
You don't know.
Because, you know, just because you test negative one day doesn't mean you won't have it the next day.
Right. I know. So it's still not safe. No, I'm not paying the $50 then if I don't know for sure.
Kevin, would you pay $50 to be tested and eat in a restaurant?
No. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think you want to know that you're in a room with safe people. So, I mean, but where does it end? I mean, is this going to go into comedy clubs too, Davin, or concerts? Yeah. Ball games.
Well, no, well,
they're gonna be racking up $50. You imagine having to take a test to go into a stadium? You know?
No, you do. I mean, we talked about this last week. Ticketmaster's coming up with something where you have to prove that you have tested negative or you've been vaccinated before they will let you in. So yeah, you do have to prove it now. So
I think it's too much, man. I think it's too much, Davin.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if I was desperate for a test, I would do it. But I'm not. Listen, I want to eat inside, but I still wouldn't trust it, even if everybody tested negative. You know, I talked about, Kevin, on the first part of the show, I was working indoors this past weekend doing comedy, and I had anxiety, like, about getting sick. So I can't imagine just going, oh, yeah, I can have a steak. No, it's okay. I'll cook.
So did you quarantine from your family for a couple of days or no?
No, I mean, I took precautions. I wore a mask the whole time. You know, no, I didn't take any. What did you? Now you came back from Florida. Did you quarantine?
For 3 days. 3 days. You know, I figured if I didn't have any symptoms after 3 days, I was going to be okay. I mean, it was still risky, but for 3 days, you know, it's been 3 weeks and I'm okay. So I guess it worked out well for Patricia and I. But it was. I was scared. You know, you're really scared that you're going to get somebody else sick. You know, somebody that you love sick, you know that. You don't want to bring home to your kid or your wife.
Well, my wife came back from Florida over the summer. She went to see her mother who broke her hip, and she quarantined for 2 weeks. Like, we were not sleeping in the same room. We were not, you know, like, if we would drive someplace, she would have a mask on and the windows would be open. I mean, you got to be careful. But, no, I mean, I didn't. I wore a mask the whole time, hoping for the best. But, you know, listen.
You know, did they change mics and all that stuff? You work on the same mic as the other comics?
I brought,
all that sort of stuff?
I brought my own microphone.
Yeah.
Did you share mic?
Yeah, no.
Did you share mic?
Yeah, but, you know, I sprayed the mic down. So that's part of my show.
Not me, man. I mean, yeah, he does do that. But, I'm bringing my own mic. I'm trying to stay away from people. You know, I'm not handshaking. I'm still selling merch.
No.
I'll do a fist bump, but, you know, I'm Purelling and everything. Trying to be as safe as I can be.
Don't go to Florida, man. They don't care about it. They want to come up to you. They want to freaking take pictures with you. I had to beg one girl to put her mask on. She's like, I got to wear a mask, take a picture with you? I go, yeah. And she wanted a picture with me, so she put her mask on, but she wasn't happy about it, you know. It's crazy.
That's why I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not. You know, listen, I want to work back in Florida, but I'm not. I know Florida is the Wild West. I know listen, my mother-in-law lives down there, and, you know, Publix, the big supermarket, you don't have to wear your mask inside. So she doesn't go to Publix anymore.
I would not shop there.
No. Publix, by the way. That's my favorite grocery store of all time, by the way. And they don't have them up here, man. Oh, I love Publix, man. Every time I go to Florida, I got a boner for Publix. I'm sorry. That's my favorite place. That's my favorite place. I love Florida. I mean, I can't wait to go to a Publix when I get to Florida. It's like one of my favorite places to go in Florida.
What's so great about it?
You know what? The closest thing we have to it up here, I guess, is a Wegmans, maybe.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that's the closest we have to is maybe a Wegmans. Or it's not as expensive as Whole Foods, but it's like more like a Wegmans. We don't have Wegmans in New York either, not near me anyway. So, but yeah,
nope.
I'm a healthy guy. I do a lot of health stuff. It has all the food. They're really big on the health stuff. That's important. And a lot of old people live there, so I guess they cater to, you know, that health thing for the old people. So,
all right, I'm gonna take.
So yeah,
there we go.
You're set, man. I love going to Publix and going to eating all the fruit and all the healthy stuff. They already cut it up for you and everything is wonderful.
Yeah, most supermarkets do that, Kevin. But okay, whatever you like. You know what? Yeah. You and I will not go on tour because I don't want to be going Publix hopping. You and I will not be doing that. All right, let's.
Not all supermarkets are made alike. I get it.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know what? You should shop at the one we do in the Bahamas. Then you'll be happy that you have ShopRite. All right. On the break, new music from 26th Avenue with Dissolution and Gary and Linda with My First Pandemic. And you can learn more about both those artists at deucemusic.com. Short break. We'll come back with Dead or Alive, that fun game which Pip has put together. And then